When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Mark.
Talk about songs.
We sure do. It's episode 245. Of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I do enjoy those occasional times when the number of the episode contains a kind of record, as it does today.
Oh,
I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting. I am here, as always, with the span flandiferous Mark Blankenship. Hello, Mark.
I look forward to episode 780 so that we can have a 78.
Yes.
Yes, hello, Sarah, and hello, listeners. Today is an episode in the number five, which tends to be the time when we do something a little unusual, a little outside the box. In previous episodes ending with the number five, we have ranked argumentative duets. We have ranked songs with dubious heroes. Today, we are going to be ranking songs in which the artist sings about how hard it is to be famous, a genre that has a perpetual stream of songs coming into it every day. I mean, people always have some time to talk about how hard it is to be famous.
Uh-huh. Evergreen, for sure.
So we're going to be ranking 9 songs today. They are, in alphabetical order by title, Drowned World / Substitute for Love by Madonna, The Entertainer by William Joel, his friends call him Billy, Everything I Wanted by a different Billy, Eilish, Falling Down by Selena Gomez, and The Scene, Leave Me Alone by Michael Jackson, Lucky by Britney Spears, Mo Money, Mo Problems by the Notorious B.I.G. and a cast of idiots, Rumors by Lizzo featuring Cardi B, and Turn the Page by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. One of the things I'll just say up front, Sarah, I like this group of songs because they demonstrate that every decade and every genre has a song about how hard it is to be famous.
Yeah, at least one. At least one. Before I get into explaining how the ranking episodes work arithmetically, let me note that you might be wondering to yourself, self, why didn't they include Freedom 90 or Wanted Dead or Alive by George Michael and Bon Jovi, respectively? Well, that's because we've already talked about those songs in previous episodes, standalones. Please go back in the catalog and enjoy those. But we thought that we should just treat with new songs to us, songs that we hadn't really talked about before. Although there have been many references in the past to Drowned World, I think we will get into it. Now, here's how the math works. We rank the songs in the order, usually album order. This time it's alphabetical order. And each one receives a point value based on where we've ranked it. There's 9 songs this time, so the number one song will receive 9 points, the number two will receive 8 points, etc., and so on. I assign points, Mark assigns points, and our Patreon patrons helped us rank these songs as well. All of these numbers will be combined, and at the end, we will determine who has the hardest time being famous / let us have the best time listening to how hard it is for them to be famous, and who's just a complaining jackass. Have I missed anything?
No, I think you've actually hit it perfectly, because the complaining jackass could actually be the subtitle of this entire project this week.
# rich people problems. All right. Well, shall we begin then with our first song, longest title winner, Drowned World / Substitute for Love?
Yes. You know, I'm so glad that we're finally giving ourselves a chance to talk about a Madonna song on this show.
I love that we make the same joke every time, too.
I know. This is roughly song number 87 by Madonna that we've discussed on this program.
Seems low. Chart facts to impart, because we do have a clip to lead us off.
This is the opening track from her Ray of Light album. It was not released in America as a single, but it was released as a single in the United Kingdom, where it peaked at number 10.
Huh. Well, we'll see where it peaks on our charts, but first, here's a clip. I apologize for the length of this, but I wanted to A, try to get in everything that Madge was doing, and B, specifically try to get in listeners, return with us now to those pretentious days of yesteryear when Madonna was trying it with a British accent. Here's a clip.
Without a second thought, it all became a silly game. Some things cannot be bought. I got exactly what I asked for, wanted it so badly. Running, rushing back for more, I suffered fools so gladly. And now I find I've changed my mind.
You see,
the face of you, substitute for love.
Thought. Oh God, shit. This is terrible. The Madonna British accent was terrible. I like what she's doing in the song structurally to reflect the content.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting song, especially to lead an album.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that she is going through something in the lyrics that is sincere. But at the same time, I think she does choose fame as her, like, emotional language and does not regret it and shouldn't, because that's who she is. I like the way the processed sound surrounds her like a shell, but at the same time sends up the idea that Madonna has a truly vulnerable soft center, because, bless her heart, but I don't really feel that that's true. I feel like she's talking here about how the world wants that to be true because she's a woman artist.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, you know what? I got this. I've always had this. Like, just, this is who I am. Step off. Stop expecting me to be this Harlequin romance idea of a Malamar personality. With that said, and I don't hate the song, it's in last place for me of these songs.
Yeah, I get it.
Because I skip over it every time when I'm listening to this album, because I'm just like impatient. Like, I respect what it's trying to do, but there's so many better songs of hers I'd rather be listening to that I'm like, okay, like, duly noted, you've received credit on this assignment, next. So, sorry, girl, 1 point.
I agree with you on so many levels here. For one thing, yes, this song is a really bold way to open an album,
mm-hmm.
because it's 5 minutes long. It has movements. The mm-hmm. end of the song does not sound like the beginning of the song.
Yeah.
She's in fine vocal fettle. Yep. This is the album that she famously made after those years of Evita vocal training. So mm-hmm. she sounds good on the album. But it's just a turgid song.
Yeah, it is. It's an exercise, like, I feel.
Yeah, it's fine. And I do like the end of the song when she gets that crescendo where her voice gets bigger at the bridge and the drums start crashing in. There's an intelligence to the way that this song is made, but you just saying it's an exercise and also referring to it as an assignment really does reflect how I feel about listening to it.
Yeah, yes, yes.
It's like Madonna has indicated that she is capable of creating a sophisticated song. Thank you. I will now skip ahead to Ray of Light.
Yeah. Well, and also, there's nothing unsophisticated about anything else she's ever done. Like, Dress You Up might not be fine vocal fettle for anyone, but it's I mean, it is sophisticated songcraft. It gets done what it needs to do, so.
Totally. I mean, same, like, causing a commotion may not be the most brilliant lyric, but that song is hot, and it's very sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let me also say this is a good time to remind our listeners, if you haven't yet read it, Sarah and I wrote a book about Madonna called Madonna A to Z, and you can find that at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. That's markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. Go buy it and see what we've got to say about this old broad.
Yeah, it's fun, and it fits in a jeans pocket. You're welcome.
So I'm going to agree with your ranking, too. I put it in seventh place with three points, but it, you know, ask me tomorrow, and that would have bounced around. The bottom third of this countdown for, of this episode for me is was in flux a lot, but certainly same. This is not one of my top hits.
Yeah, me neither.
So I put it in seventh and gave it 3 points, as did the patrons. So we're all essentially aligned on this here track.
That is fascinating. I really thought that there would be some kind of virtual fight with knives about this, but I'm glad I spoke my truth and that it was a shared truth up to a point.
Indeed.
That's not to say that.
I also just want to note, there are like 300 songs by Madonna alone about how difficult it is to be famous. And we could have done a whole episode of just her songs, like Gone, I Deserve It, Nobody Knows Me.
Mm-hmm.
The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, it does.
Next on our list is a song, Sarah, that you asked to be included, if I'm remembering correctly.
I did, and then I didn't clip it. Who's a complaining jackass now? It's always me. So this is The Entertainer by William Joel. I mostly didn't clip it because I, for one, didn't even need to re-listen to it. I listened to the song conservatively 3 times a week during various old lady walks, so didn't really need to review it. Listen to it again anyway because I love it. Is it good? Well, I also didn't clip it because I feel like everybody basically knows the song. A lot of the sound is like pretty, it's pretty Billy Joel, mid-70s, kind of dated. It is pretty self-pitying. But in spite of the like too much lyrics and that you wouldn't believe all the paperwork about that he's saying about being a rock star, it is a great build. Like in this period, he was doing a lot of like start with a very simple line, come in with the lyrics, then there's another instrument, and by the end you have like an entire orchestra pit wailing away. I enjoy that about him. I will note that famous lyric, like you got to cut it down to 305. The song is 3 minutes and 41 seconds. Like, buddy, that W was right there. Why didn't you just take it? Why did you cut it down to 305? But it does have some sense of humor about itself. Anyone who has had to integrate their artistic life's work to date into a corporate environment will find something to relate to here.
Not that anyone on this podcast could relate to that.
I have no idea. Like, look, I've sold out and I would do it again, but it, you know, there's paperwork with that. I just love this song and have always loved it outside of its relative quality. And it is my number one. 9 points.
Ooh, bold. Well, Sarah, once again, as has happened before, the gulf between your Billy Joel experience and mine is wide because I had never heard this song before until we prepared
really?
For this episode.
That is like, once again, it's like, this is like my sister-in-law managing not to have seen any of the original Star Wars movies until like 2004. Like, how do you even do that? It's hard to do.
Yeah, I think, again, as I think we've discussed before, in the South, Billy Joel just wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, fair.
Like, he was just like a guy with some hits, but he was not, at least in my growing up experience, someone that anyone gave that much of a shit about.
Well, and stuff from this album, Street Life Serenade, which has a handful of outstanding songs and then just as many that are complete dog shit, like to the point where I kicked them out of my Apple Music catalog because I was like, don't miss me with Roberta, okay? But I feel like this album didn't start I didn't hear a lot of it until it became an oldies album, I feel like. Mm. Like we, I think we owned it in our home, but it wasn't, it didn't get as much radio play sort of when I was a kid, as much as like Innocent Man or Allentown or Nylon Curtain, sorry. So like these songs were sort of new to me also. But once I heard The Entertainer, I was off to the races. And I think that was like in the 90s sometime. Anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, as has I've gone on the record on this show before saying, I could take or leave Billy Joel, honestly.
Uh-huh.
That said, I actually really like this song. Huh. And it was not unlike my experience of Sleeping with the Television On, which you introduced me to many moons ago. I think this song is really enjoyable. I'm very impressed by how much he gets across in the lyrics. Like, it's interesting to hear you call them the too muchness lyrics, because to me, I was just really surprised and entertained by how complicated and detailed the story is in this song. I'm also shocked that he was this angry and cynical in 1974. Like, he had barely released any albums.
Yeah. This is like his second or third one. And then there's a song on here also about Los Angeles, which is, I mean, I think he thinks it's scathing. It's actually just sort of sad.
Right.
In that New York versus LA in the 70s way. But yeah, this is We Didn't Start the Fire, Mark One, and Good.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I also love that song, but I'm not a, you know, it's not good. I just love it.
But I really especially love the verse, I am the entertainer, been all around the world. I've played all kinds of palaces and laid all kinds of girls. I can't remember faces. I don't remember names. Ah, but what the hell? You know, it's just as well. Because after a while and 1,000 miles, it all becomes the
same. It all becomes the same.
What a beautifully succinct and potent evocation of the empty hedonism of life on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some like internal rhyme and structuring there too that is advanced, and yet it's sort of like this driving, like it's a good song to walk to, too. Like, you know, he's not famous for no reason.
Exactly. It turns out that he's really like, my lack of passion for him allows me to keep being surprised when I hear songs like this, and I think, God, this is really good. Turns out, Billy Joel can sell out Madison Square Garden every week of the year for a reason.
Yeah. It sometimes can be a head scratcher even to his fans, but it's like, okay, yeah, I see you. You know how to do this. So where'd you rank it?
So I put this in third place.
Wow. I thought that you were going to be like 11th. This is absurd. Interesting.
Let me tell you, I shocked myself a lot as we go through.
Me too.
But we'll get to it. So I put it in third place, which gives it 7 points from me, and the patrons put it in fourth place, which gives it 6 points from them.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, all right.
From one Billy to the next, Billie Eilish, who won the Grammy for Record of the Year with the song Everything I Wanted just this year, 2021, if you're listening as we drop this episode. And this single peaked at number 8. It is not on any album. It was released as a standalone single, but it did quite well for itself. It was in the top 10 for many weeks. Even though it didn't go higher than 8, it still hung around in those lower rungs for quite a while. Sarah, I believe we do have a clip of this song, if I'm not mistaken.
We do. Let's hear it now.
I tried to scream, but my head was underwater. They called me weak, like I'm not just somebody's daughter. It could have been a nightmare, but it felt like they were right there. And it feels like yesterday was a year ago.
I don't recall having heard this song before, and I was ensorcelled by it. And this is part of like my thing with Billie Eilish is sort of your thing with Billy Joel, that it's like, if she impresses me, that's great, but it's not usually for me. Like, it's all a little performatively disaffected for me sometimes. But there was something about, first of all, that this is like Phoebe Bridgers, but with hand claps, like this particular song. It's like Phantom Casio. And like that, work.
Didn't she have a burlesque number down on Avenue B?
She did. But there's something about the timing of this too, like the cultural conversation that I think we've been having for the last year, sort of centering around Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles, and just the need, not just for entertainers and performers to serve, so to say, and whether we need to realign our thinking on that, but particularly this feeling that I think a lot of women and girls have, that if we admit that we're struggling, then we'll be dismissed forever as girls. Like, you know, not as good as, tough as men. And why is there that binary? And why don't we just all link arms with everyone that we can and be like, this shit is hard? And especially in a song like this, where what you're talking about is the expectations of fame, and that she's like, look, I got people who count on me, and I can't just be like, I'm exhausted and I need to go down the shore. So this really spoke to me, and her typically, like, not academic, but there is like a somewhat distanced from emotional content emotionally. Mm-hmm. That really works here. This is a lovely song to listen to. It's steeped in rue, as Dr. Cole said about The Great Gatsby, but with that beat coming in, that's like the contrast between the beginning when it's a very sort of naked arrangement. And then there's this processing that comes into it, and it points up the contrast between the artistic self and the received product, in a way that I think is visceral as well as very intelligent. Maybe I ranked this wrong, but I ranked it pretty high. It's my number two. Well done, Ms. Eilish. Take that Grammy and give it a kiss for me.
I love it. And the Billy's doing very well for you in this countdown. So, I agree with you that typically a Billie Eilish song makes me go, I'm glad that the kids enjoy this. I don't get it. I am too old for this is the way I feel when I listen to most of her songs, with the exception of Bad Guy, which is a song that I really enjoy.
We talked about it.
The song Therefore I Am, which is a song with a beat that I like. And then perhaps surprisingly, I also like this song. It is very much in the Phoebe Bridgers lane, which, you know, is typically not my lane. But this is the song that was meant for headphones.
Yes.
And like, if you're just listening to it as you're walking around the city, I feel like it's hard to grasp what's happening in it because it's such a subtle work of art. But if you are quiet and you give yourself over to it, even in the clip you just pulled, there's so many interesting little soundscape things happening that I find very compelling. And I think I might be wrong, but I've always interpreted the person in the song that she's singing about who is there for her as being not a lover, but her brother, Phineas, who is her producer. And I don't know if that's just a narrative that I've invented for myself, but I like it. I like the idea that it's a song about siblings taking care of each other in the face of fame, which is just this crazy fucking place.
Right.
So I find that it's like one of the few Billie Eilish songs that, because I hear that in it, has some sort of emotional accessibility.
Yeah.
And because you're so right that most of the time it's like feeling things is uncool. That's the way it seems
or
to
it's
be.
Like emotion recollected in tranquility, but like this is too much tranquility and too much recollecting and not enough emotion, which is fine. And that's her brand, I guess, but that it can crack, or that she can leverage it like this for an occasional moment of genuine feeling is cool. Good for her.
Yeah. Now, that being said, there's only so far that I can go down the Billie Eilish road. So it's still only my number six. But for me, that's actually a really high score for a song like this.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked it wasn't last for me, so I totally get it.
So again, I guess the Grammys, they got it right. Sixth place from me, sixth place from the patrons, second place from you. So a solid performance by Madame Eilish. All right. Now, next we have a song that you chose to include on this countdown, Falling Down by Selena Gomez and The Scene. And I have to say, Sarah, I am very curious to know how you came to know this particular song.
I am so enjoying Selena on Only Murders in the Building, and sort of went down a mini rabbit hole with her, like, you know, Disney product, basically. And so, especially since she's been pretty open about her struggles with, you know, just mood disorders and stuff, I thought that this would be a good one to include, especially as a compare and contrast with Britney and Lucky later in our episode. And I hadn't heard this one before, to my knowledge, before I went down this, like, Selena path on Apple Music. But, you know, it's fine and fun. And as exhortations to keep it real go, it's a perfectly crafted Disney product. I wanted to like it a little more than I did. Mm-hmm. Because I think that she, as an artist, has a lot of new things to show us, and we're not quite there yet, maybe. I have been, again, very impressed with her on Only Murders in the Building, on her, and on her ability to balance a humor and also a like, this is a person who carries grief around, this character, but she doesn't, like, her touch is very light with that. So you kind of want this song to be better, but it's from like 15 years ago. So you know, it is what it is. It's like old school Hannah Montana shit. That said, I like Hannah Montana songs because I'm a very strange person who contains multitudes. So this was my number four, 6 points.
Nice. So I also do quite like several Selena Gomez songs. There's a song called Bad Liar that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Lose You to Love Me is a good song. This song is perfectly fine at being an assembly line product. And as anyone who has listened to this show for more than 15 seconds knows, I've got no kick with songs that came off the assembly line.
Meaning.
Sometimes they're just what I want.
Yeah.
But for me, because we do have some other assembly line songs coming down the pike later in this episode that I think are, well, spoiler, transcendent.
Interesting. Okay.
I feel like this one can only pale in comparison. And while I find it perfectly fine, I don't find it very memorable. So I put it in eighth place with 2 points.
Interesting. Oh, boy. Well, it looks like the knife fight might happen after all.
What those blades, everyone.
Yeah.
So that's 2 points for me. And I'm assuming that the patrons just didn't know this song, and that often tends to work against tracks in our countdown or ranking episodes. So they put it in last place with 1 point.
That's fair. And I fully acknowledge and embrace, in fact, that my Selena Gomez experience of late in a completely different medium, it definitely gave this a boost that it probably didn't deserve, but that's why we rank the episodes. Who can say?
I love it. To me, those idiosyncrasies are the point. And I have not yet started to watch Only Murders in the Building, but I am definitely going to watch after next week, when my job goes from being a whirlwind of insanity to being a thing that a normal person can handle. So I look forward to watching that show soon.
I really am looking forward to your thoughts. I think you will really like it. I was surprised to bond with it the way I did, but yeah. Anyway,
Yeah, I read something recently about how it has become one of the stealth breakout hits of the season, which brought me joy just to know.
Yeah, and it's kind of all different, at least sort of in my sphere, all different kinds of TV critics with different tastes, sort of like me, going into it arms folded, and then by the end of it being like, huh, because it doesn't exactly always do what you expect. So anyway, listeners, first of all, watch it. Let us know what you think. And let us know if you think Mark will like it. I think he will.
I suspect I will. And this is a great time to remind you, I think I've told you this before, that the weirdest moment of sexual attraction I've ever had to a celebrity was Martin Short in the movie Captain Ron.
Okay. Oh my God. I don't think I knew that before. So you're actually minding me for the, for the very first time.
I couldn't have been more than 14. And I just remember simultaneously thinking, I find him very sexy in this moment. And I don't know how to feel about that because that's weird.
Hey, look, Steve Martin and Roxanne, I still would. And that fake nose heavens, is horrible. Yes. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so next we have a song that I wanted to include. It's Leave Me Alone by the late Michael Jackson.
Speaking of dramatic noses.
Seriously. This is a song that on its face is not really about the difficulties of fame. It's about some woman, who won't leave Michael Jackson alone. But the music video is what makes this song, I think, appropriate for this countdown. Because, Sarah, I don't know if you remember the music video, but it features him in an amusement park.
Yes.
Going in a little bumper car surrounded by tabloid stories about himself.
Yes. There. I mean, it's an excellent video. It's very sort of sledgehammer in, like, I don't know, feel.
Yeah,
that animation. We don't have a clip, but like, I assume everybody basically knows this song. And I thought about clipping it, but then I did a little reading about the song and sort of found some quotes from people that get at my frustration with the song. Mm-hmm. But I would say the video, like without the video, the song doesn't quite go for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always felt this way that like the opening chords are like, this is going to be a great song. But as the song continues, you just keep waiting for it to like go there and it can't. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It just feels like an exhausted homage to other better songs in his catalog. And in Rolling Stone, J. Edward Keyes called it a darker inversion of The Way You Make Me Feel, which I think is right on. But The Way You Make Me Feel, I don't know, like that vocal is better, that song is better, because that song commits to what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
This needs to be either more plaintive or more angry, but it can't decide whether it's pissed off or scared, and then it never quite takes off as a result. And there are some moments in there where there is like genuine wailing at his plight, but it also lands extremely differently now that you know, once you understand that one of the things he wanted attention taken off of was his felonious relationships with children. So I can't grade this one on a curve. Because it wants things it shouldn't want, and it doesn't want the things it should want, and it just doesn't go. So this is a seventh for me. 3 points.
Yeah. Seventh place. Yes, 3 points from you. And well said across the board. I thought that I liked this song because, as is so often the case for songs from the 80s, I confused familiarity with affection.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And to think that the album that contains this song also contains, as you said, The Way You Make Me Feel and the exceptional Smooth Criminal.
Yeah.
It's startling to think that this song was allowed on the same album, frankly.
Yeah.
To me, because Smooth Criminal is actually sinister in a way that this song isn't. And The Way You Make Me Feel is actually horny in a way that this song isn't. And I agree with you. It has this neither here nor there quality. And it Michael Jackson, by this point, and definitely as he went further in his career, was guilty of making songs that were so heavy, they were leaden.
Mm-hmm.
And songs like Blood on the Dance Floor and They Don't Care About Us, and it just the more insular and paranoid he got, the harder the songs became to enjoy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So for me, if it weren't for the music video, this song would be a complete forgetter, a nothing burger. And I put it in ninth place because, like you, I also can't forget the context of Michael Jackson now.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Alas.
So that's seventh from you, ninth from me. And in between us, in eighth place, is where the patrons put it. So not a great scoring day for Michael Jackson today.
No.
Now, next, Sarah. We have Lucky by Britney Spears, and I pulled a clip from this. So before I dive into my thesis on this song, let's give it a listen. Oh, okay. Look, this song is ludicrous. It is a ridiculous song. It opens with Britney Spears saying, "This is a story about a girl called Lucky." And then in the middle, there is a spoken word section from a fake award show
where Lucky
wins a prize.
Okay. Mike Hunt. It's on par. Pop News. Just kidding. It's not Mike Hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Amanda Huggenkiss reporting.
IP Freely, Bureau Chief.
It is on par with the monologue from the song Oops, I Did It Again, also on this album, where the guy's like, "I went down to the bottom of the ocean and got it for you, babe." But what I hear, this song has a magical power over me that I don't try to explain or understand. I just accept. One thing I like about it is that it is not about Britney Spears herself. It is about a fictionalized other character. It's the only song on this countdown, or I keep saying countdown. It's the only song on this ranking episode, and in fact, one of the only songs I can think of about the difficulties of fame that is not self-focused, but is instead focused on someone else, which I like as a perspective, narratively. The song is so shameless in its desire to hook us. It has like 17 different choruses. There's a part where she goes, "Ow, ow, 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 ow." And like, why is that there? There is no reason for it to be there other than Max Martin, who co-wrote and produced the song, decided we just need one more thing to make it an earworm. And there's something so, how to put this? There's something so guileless about this song because Britney Spears didn't yet have the weight of the world on her to really understand what this song is about, like she did when she made her later songs about the price of fame, like Piece of Me or Circus. And I just find it to be so charming and dumb. And I just love it, Sarah. And I put it at number two, 8 points.
Okay. Well, here's another inversion for you. I really enjoy this song, like, but the fact is this song is a Franken song that is basically like all the same production tricks from Oops, I Did It Again and a couple of Backstreet B-sides.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like that's what it is. Like you can hear melody line snips. I love that sort of chord progression in the end of the chorus. And talk about it landing differently now, the song.
Yeah.
That she's like, this is happening to a friend of mine. And she's like basically sending a code with her blinking to like send help.
Yeah.
But there is no sense. And this is, forgive me, in my experience, standard for Britney, there is no sense of relating to what she's singing at all. In this case, I think you can say that it's because she is young and was given this collection of thoughts by Max Martin, and she stood where she was told and sang what she was told. But between the similarity to other hits of hers on the same album, the estrangement from the content on the part of the content delivery system is unsettling, given everything that we have learned in the last year or two about Britney's situation. And it just, that uncanny valley of execution for me this time does not work. Again, I have no kick with Factory Product. The parts of other things from which this is assembled are all good. The song itself is not the issue. It's just like, I'm not able in this case to separate the reality of her imprisonment by fame later from the content of this song. And this feeling that like this person was in solitary too long and the lights are on, but nobody's home. Like I can't truly enjoy the song as a song because of this like hall of mirrors feeling about her as a person. So, number 8, 2 points. I don't hate the song. I just went on an upsetting journey with it and I can't untake it. So, 8th. Sorry.
And here's the thing. I absolutely understand everything you're saying, and I cannot offer any defense that makes sense of why I love this song. Like, there's something, I don't know why, like, there's something about this song's shittiness that brings me joy, and that's not true of every shitty song.
Yeah.
Like, why do I love the monologue?
Hold your butt in tight. I get it.
Put your butt in, exactly. Why do I love the monologue from Mike Hunt so much? I don't know. I just do.
I mean, look, Hunt is a pro. That's all I'm going to say.
That's right. So the patrons also agreed with me, shockingly enough, and put this song in second place with 8 points.
I think
so,
that's probably correct. I just like, I was attaching more meaning. So to say, then probably I should have to some of this shit. But you know what? These are going to have the force of law and we're all just going to have to live with it. So
that's right. Okay. Well, speaking of Mo, now we've got Notorious B.I.G.'s Mo Money, Mo Problems featuring Puff Daddy and Maze. This was a number one hit in the United States during my first semester of college. Mm-hmm. I always associate it with my first semester of college. This and Aqua's Barbie Girl were the soundtracks of many, many stupid late night dances.
So fantastic. Oh my God. I love that song.
I know I do too. But those two songs in September, October of 97, when on the freshman dorm hallway, they were always bumping from somebody's room and everybody liked both of them. And I pulled a clip. So here is Biggie's verse from that song.
No info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement. My team supreme, stay clean. Triple beam, miracle dream. I be that, catch a seat at all events bent. Gats and holsters, girls on shoulders. Playboy, I told ya, me and Mike's to me. Bruise too much, I lose too much. Step on stage, the girls boo too much. I guess it's cause you run with lame.
Okay, so a couple of things. One, the sample of Diana Ross's I'm Coming Out that provides us the basis of this song is perfectly chosen.
Mm-hmm.
The song is really interesting narratively because there is a conflict between the chorus, which says, the more famous and rich that I get, the more complicated my life becomes, and the lyrics that Biggie spits, which are about how he's kind of awesome and he's enjoying even when people boo him, he's like, yeah, fuck y'all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm the best. And I really love that. And if this song were just Notorious B.I.G. rapping,
yes,
it would be my number one.
Yeah.
That said, Sarah.
But it is not.
It is not. There is also a verse from Maze, the least interesting rapper of all time, that seems to take 9 years.
It really does. Jesus.
Like, what the fuck? How did that happen that he got to have a career? He is charisma free.
And the mix is like passive aggressively not helping him either, in my opinion.
I know.
Jesus.
And
Puffy.
Then there's Puff Daddy's verse, which also isn't good. And once you wade through what feels like 10 hours of that shit, you finally get to the gold in this song. And it's like Notorious B.I.G., his flow, I mean, I don't have to say anything about that. Many people have explained it. But yes, this song demonstrates why he was so great. And one time when I was in high school, he was in an elevator with me in Nashville, and he reeked of pot. And my friend Sam and I thought that was really cool.
That is really cool.
We were like, oh, shit, that was Biggie.
Yeah. Where'd you rank it?
But so I ended up putting it in fifth place because I had to split the difference between the first and second parts of the song. Fifth place, 5 points. But I will say that the patrons put it in first with 9.
Okay, here's my issue. I'm glad you pulled this sample because if we were ranking these based on like how interesting is this to talk about and how instructive is this as to how like what different things hip-hop artists are good at and how construction really matters and how collabs, I hate that word so much, but whatever, among rappers, like why do some work and others don't, and why do some feel like they're, you know, three guys in a, you know, in an elevator built for two, and why does some feel like it's a big party? If we were just ranking it based on like, why does this work? Who are these people? What should they have done differently? It would definitely be number one. But it isn't. And this is the thing. You have Puffy, who he's not that good a rapper.
No.
And like, he's not interesting. His timbre is not interesting. He's not compelling as a rapper, but as a person who understands on like a bone marrow level, who is good, what is cool, and which sample to throw at a problem like his C+ rapping using, you know, just how are we going to throw money at the problem of my talent not being much? Well, we're going to outspend and get these pricey samples, and he's always right. Like, he has an ear and an eye, but his artistic voice is like branding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's riding around on a fucking ski-doo in a tuxedo, hawking some, like, artisanal marshmallow vodka. Like, that... all of those words in that order sound fucking ridiculous, and you see this ad and you're like, I'll try that shit. Because he is fucking cool looking and he makes things that you're like, this should not work. Oh, okay. Like, he is a packager, nonpareil. Okay? But on this song, it's like, Maze, 2 weeks later, you finally get to the Puffy verse, and it's like, who cares? And then Biggie comes in, and the whole thing, it's like a change in weather. Like,
yes.
Clouds part, sun comes down. This is a fucking genius. It gets, like, my IQ went up when he came on the track. And, like, they should have led with him and just given him the whole thing and told Maze, we'll still pay you, but just go in the parking lot and do whatever it is people do in the parking lot. Like, we don't need you. This song needs narrative terrain, but the thing is, it doesn't, because it's dominated and overshadowed by the sample, and the only person with enough juice artistically to compete it with it and win is Biggie. And they didn't lead with him. They didn't give him the whole track. There's no narrative terrain. That said, I am never pissed off to hear this song. Ever. Because it's built perfectly for what it is. it just is sort of like, oh, right, Biggie is the best. And then you sort of get to the end and you're like, that was great. Thanks for saving that track, Biggie. Fuck, I miss that guy. I don't know. Fascinating prospect for discussion. And I have always said this about Puff, that I think he's just like, as an aggregator of talent and style, nobody touches him. But this song, this break should be 17 times better than it is, and it could have been, and it isn't. So it's number 5 points.
Exactly the same as me. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I want to just reiterate what you said. It's so such a true point that if you're going to step to a sample of I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross, which is such a fucking good song, it is actually chemically impossible to be in a bad mood when that song is on.
Yeah.
You've really got to have something to offer me. And Maze ain't it.
No.
And
I mean,
this,
and
like
there are
said,
a lot of, I could see a lot of hip hop artists hearing that and being like, I'm just going to get knocked the fuck out by that.
Yeah.
Like it won't even be a full round. It'll be one swing. Like I'm not stepping in there. And Biggie's like, I got this. It's no problem. Like, you're right.
I know.
You do. And it wasn't.
And like you said, for all of its deficiencies, I will never be sorry to hear this song. And I guess in a way, maybe it was clever to put Biggie last, because if he was first, who would listen to the end?
Yeah.
But if you know that Biggie's coming, you're like, okay, I can wade through the first part of this song because I'm going to get to the best part.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason that this song works in a way, because if it were Biggie than the other two, this song, I would listen to it for 90 seconds and turn it off. But mm-hmm. I have to wait for my reward in
yeah.
this structure.
And I don't think that's, I mean, Puff might not be talented at rapping, like at rhyming, but he knew.
Yeah. It makes me actually think about the song that he released right around this time that he produced for MC Light, Cold Rock a Party, which uses the sample of Diana Ross's Upside Down. Mm-hmm. Do you know that song?
Yes, I do.
Whew. Now talk about someone else who was able to step to the level of the sample. MC Light on that song is so fucking good. And it is another example of Puffy knowing exactly what to do when
yeah.
he is the one assembling the brand.
Yeah. And I just would love to sort of be in meetings and it's like everybody's putting note cards up on the board and his is like this complete crazy wall of pastiche that everyone's like, who's going to tell him? And no one tells him and he does it and it rules.
Yeah, ha, exactly. Okay, well, so that brings us to another hip-hop inflected offering on this episode, which is Rumors, the recently released single by Lizzo featuring Cardi B. This is the first song that Lizzo has released since becoming a superstar. You might remember that in January of 2019, we talked about her on this very show before
we sure did.
She had blown up. So, you know,
yeah.
you heard it here first.
Sure did.
And Rumors spent 1 week in the top 10. It debuted at number 4 and then has quickly faded from view. I have to say, Sarah, I understand why it has not stuck around.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be better than it is, but I feel
Same.
Like it is choked by Lizzo's resentment for the haters. And I wish that this song were better because I like her so much and I think she's so talented. And as so often seems to be the case, Cardi B comes in and makes the song better.
Yeah.
And you just think, wow, maybe this should have just been a Cardi B song. I don't know. That's my experience of it. There's something about it where it seems that Lizzo is trying too hard to defend herself and it
yeah.
becomes lyrically heavy and musically overly complicated. And then Cardi B just comes in and is like, fuck y'all. My records live in the top 10. I'm amazing. My titties are fake. Bye.
Fake ass, fake boobs. Like, yeah. And then she's just like wearing some kind of like body chain exotic dancer thing. She's real pregnant, but she's Cardi B. So she's just like, yeah, this is another one where the artists are, should not be fighting with each other, but they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that like, I think you're exactly right. Like I couldn't quite put my finger on it when I was re-listening to this, but Lizzo does sound legitimately bitter in a way that she's not harnessing as well as she thinks she
mm-hmm.
is. And like she has reason for sure, but she's not, it's not being leveraged as well as it could be. And also Cardi B, just like, that is a star that, like, you're, you know, to fight that pull is very hard. And, you know, the confidence that this song needs once it arrives in the form of Cardi B, it's tough to reset, if that makes any sense. My main problem with it is that everything that's going on around the rhyming sounds cheap and shitty. Like, it needs a better rhythm line. Like, these are strong personalities. This just sounds like some fucking Pond 5 trap crap. Why? That's disrespectful, in my opinion. And the horns also sound very cheap.
Pond 5.
Yeah, Pond 5. Like, just put the Pond 5 thing. That would be more interesting. But, like, there's a lot to enjoy here. I just kept ranking, like, things ahead of it and being like, am I really putting X ahead of Lizzo and Cardi? Like, I felt weird about it, but the fact is, like, it doesn't work. Like, they should have just gone back to it and been like, this needs to be either much more in this part or much less in this part, or we need to not have Cardi, because it just kind of throws everything off. So, yeah, I mean, again, I don't really hate anything on the list, but this was number 6.
Yeah.
4 points.
I think that completely makes sense to put it in 6th place, because, like you said, I don't hate this song either. I just want it to be better.
Yeah.
And one of the traps of making a song about how hard it is to be famous is that you get caught up in your own bitterness and you forget to make good music.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there is something about this kind of song where I think if your producer is like, do you want to maybe pull back on the, you know, on this aspect of it, like, do you want it to be less salty? That's right. Not going to be something that you can hear because of the nature of the track. Like, that's the whole point of it, is to be salty.
Right.
About haters. But then if someone's like, well, that's a little much, then it's easy to find reasons not to hear that.
Yeah. And yet for all of that, because there are so many elements of the song that I do enjoy, I'd still put it in 4th place, which is probably too high, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So you put it in 6th, I put it in 4th, and the patrons put it in 5th. We're all in a line there with Rumors. And that brings us to the final song on today's episode, which I believe you have a clip for, Sarah.
I do. There were a lot of surprises in this roller coaster ride, and this was one of them. I looked at my rankings at the end and was like, him? There? Okay, that's why they play the games. Anyway, let's hear a clip of Bob Seger's Turn the Page, and then I'm going to talk about my mysteriously high ranking.
Will you walk into a restaurant strung out from the road, and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold? You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear 'em talk, other times you can, all the same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? And you always see my number.
Okay, to begin with, I will say that it is easy to forget, since all anyone ever hears, basically, of Bob Seger anymore is old-time rock and roll.
Yep.
That he actually did have this nice sort of groovy molasses Kris Kristofferson voice, which you really hear in this verse. I clipped that because that lyric was quite striking to me. Like, this, you know, life on the road in the vast spaces of the American West, and here's this town, and, like, you gotta pee and get some coffee, and all these, you know, fuckwads named Dwayne in the back booth are like, is that a girl? And it's like, oh my god, like, Plus Ca Change. But there's something aurally about this that really is really evocative of that sense of like being on a road trip for work in the big unincorporated vastness of the square states that is not, it's not mean or condescending. It just is like a lot of the song is about how fundamentally unsafe it is to be alone. And that sort of aspect of the loneliness of the road. And I can picture this diner that this dude is in. I know what time of day it is. I know what the weather is. I know what all the other people who are giving him a side eye are wearing. I'm frankly not entirely sure how Bob Seger did that. But I really liked this song a lot and added it to my playlist and think it's really well crafted, but also not too, it's not too produced. He just like wrote this thing down. He's like, this sucks. Some of the self-pity doesn't wear real well, but I still ranked it number three, 7 points.
And did you know this song before this episode?
I feel like I had heard it before, but like in the 80s. I mean, it had been decades since I heard this. Because like I said, Bob Seger has like the one or two songs that you still hear, which are frankly not my favorites. And you never hear this one anymore, which is a shame. Yeah. I think it's good.
Because I didn't know this song at all either. And we did a Patreon call for proposals, basically, about this episode. And it was one of our listeners who suggested that we put this song here. And I am so glad that that happened because, like you, I was really taken in by the storytelling in this song. I feel like there's a quality of a Cormac McCarthy story here.
Yes, yes. I think it's also that Wanted Dead or Alive is like much more direct an homage to this than I realized because I hadn't heard the song in 30 years, if ever. So sorry to interrupt.
No, but yeah, you're exactly right that this is exactly the spirit that Wanted Dead or Alive is going for, but with the Bon Jovi excess that we love them for.
Sure.
But there's a quality of this song that, like a Cormac McCarthy story, evokes somehow, like you said, vastness and the intimacy of violence.
Yes.
Like somehow you're all alone in a landscape, but there's that black dot way out there that is going to come and get you.
Uh-huh.
And I fucking love that. And I think that it really does, even though this song is very specifically about how hard it is to live on the road, it also is about something very big in the American psyche, I think. And it is like that. You walk into a diner and, God, it's not glamorous. You're on a bus. You can't remember the name of the girl that you just were sleeping with. All you want is some coffee and these yabos in the back are like making fun of you, and it's so sinister, and like all you're trying to fucking do is live your life. And there's some things that's very restrained about the song that I wouldn't have anticipated just looking at the lyrics. It never becomes a wail musically.
Yeah.
I mean, it has dynamism, and definitely the chorus is quite catchy, and there's a lot of passion in the way that he sings it, but it never goes to that meatloaf over the top place that one might expect or could imagine.
Yeah.
And I find this song to be very haunting in a way that I wasn't anticipating because like you, all I really knew of Bob Seger was Old Time Rock and Roll and Shakedown from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Right.
Those and Like a Rock, you know, like the Ford commercials. Like
sure.
Those songs are not this song, and this song is great. And for those of you playing along at home, you might have noticed I haven't yet named my number one song because it's this.
Wow. That is crazy.
I know. I want to tell you, if you had told me when I sat down to start this project that the Bob fucking Seger song would be my number one, I would have been like,
I would have been like, that's a 14 for me, dog. But And I think I may have perhaps ranked it too low, but it's really something. Listeners, seek it out because it's like not what you think it's going to be. And that's the most fun part, I think, of these is like, again, coming in with arms folded and being like, oh, hey, this rules. So, yeah.
Totally. It and Rules, because it has a sense of true crime.
Mm-hmm. Her birthday's coming up.
The patrons agreed with you, Sarah, and they put it in third place.
Huh, okay.
And I'm actually ready. I have all of our final rankings ready to reveal to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's hear it.
All right. In ninth place with 6 points, it's Michael Jackson's Leave Me Alone. Mm-hmm. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. We will.
In eighth place with 9 points, but still enjoying a hit television show, is Selena Gomez and The Scene with Falling Down.
Mm-hmm.
In a tie for seventh place with 15 points is both Rumors and Drowned World / Substitute for Love.
Uh-huh.
In fifth place with 16 points is Billie Eilish with Everything I Wanted. In fourth place with 18 points is Lucky. And now we're on the podium. Bronze medal, third place, goes to Mo Money, Mo Problems with 19 points.
Fair enough.
And then we leap up to the silver spot with Billy Joel's The Entertainer at 22 points.
Holy shit.
And Sarah squeaking out the gold by 1 point.
What the hell?
Turn the Page is number one.
Oh my God. I will not turn the page, Mr. Bob Seger. Robert.
Like, anyone who has listened to this show for a long time can agree, I think, with me, Sarah, to say, I can't believe that we have a Bob Seger song at number one.
I can't believe that. I was a little surprised we even consented to talk about Bob Seger, and here we are. I mean, but this is the most wonderful part of this process, seeing what the other one is going to say, and Patreon supporters, like the spanner that you can throw in these works sometimes is so fun. So
I know, because truly, if it hadn't been for the patrons, this song wouldn't have made the list, and now it's our gold medalist.
Oh man. And a Madonna song is on the like anti-podium, and Bob Seger. Okay, well, you know what? I guess we're turning the page on this episode, but this was really fun. Excellent idea, and thank you for listening, guys.
And now I'm going to go because I've got tickets to see Phantom Casio.
You give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so. And
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, that's me, and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastis book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
And then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away beside the lucky guy. Oh, to never, never know. The one who loved you so well, you don't know me.
Mark
and Sarah talk about songs.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories.
But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.